Welcome to Turning Pages, a series of in-depth conversations with authors about their works.
All right. Well, Spike Carlson's latest book is A Walk Around the Block. And boy, oh boy, the things that he picks up as he walks around that block. Welcome to Turning Pages, Spike.
Thanks, Michael. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So this book begins with some freezing pipes in your home. And for a lot of people, that's just a call to a plumber or to some repairman of some sort, or it's, you know, sitting there with a hairdryer trying to warm your pipes. You end up with a book. Looking for books, or is this?
For me, it was a long journey. We didn't have water for a couple days. And after it was finally fixed, they said, if you don't want that to happen again, you need to leave your water running until spring, a trickle of water. And that was 6 weeks away. And so for 6 weeks, I got to watch that trickle of water, kind of the, you know, water torture thing. And I began thinking, I don't know where that water comes from. I don't know where that water goes. I don't even know how my call to the water department got to the water department. And so I'm a natural curious guy, and I started putting the pieces together and wound up with this book.
So your past books, you did a splintered history of wood. You've done books on building projects. You've written for Family Handyman magazine. That's kind of been your wheelhouse. Did you find that what you developed as a writer in terms of, you know, research or preparation and stuff like that applied also to this book, or did you have to like pick up any new skills to write this book?
Yeah. I mean, one thing I learned in the magazine world is that you can't just deliver information. You need to somehow engage your reader. You need to some extent entertain them. And if you can inspire them, that's even better. And so I wrote this book with that in mind. It's not just a bunch of facts or trivia. It's a book about stuff, but stuff is really about people and history and mysteries and failures and successes. And so that's kind of the approach I took, was to combine some facts with some history with some real people. And it is different than magazine writing, but magazine writing taught me a certain ruthlessness in doing research and also how to be succinct when necessary.
Now, when you say succinct, I mean, you kind of tackle a different topic for each chapter. Is it kind of trying to like tighten a chapter when you say succinct? Like, are you trying to like make things move quickly in some sense?
Yeah, well, I just remember I was interviewing a city engineer about sewers, and I started, you know, asking him questions, and he pointed over to a bookshelf that was probably 3 feet long, and it was all books about sewer basics. And so you take that and you go, okay, what's important? How can I translate English into English so that people can kind of understand the basics? And then, like I say, how can you keep it lively? So there's 26 topics in the book. I don't think there's anyone out there who's an expert on all these things. And so my goal was to find experts on all these things and try to make their stories come to life.
Right. You mentioned you're writing about stuff, but it becomes about people. I'm thinking of, you know, one of the people, Bill Keegan, who works for the recycling group that you visit. Like, how did you go about finding these people?
Well, you start on the internet, and one thing leads to another. And then it's people love to talk about what they do. And DemCon is a very progressive place, and they, to the point where they have a person in charge of education there, where they bring out a trailer and have people practice recycling and have 3D glasses where you can virtually step into the recycling plant. And there's just something about visiting a place where you get the smell and the sound and the rumble of the machinery that makes it so real that you just can't get it through just you know, just doing research on the phone. And, you know, so I visited this place, and I just have always just wheeled my recycling down to the curb and forgotten about it. But I got to spend a couple of days seeing what happens. And there's a real human element to recycling, especially when we recycle wrong. Things get tangled, things slow down. Trying to recycle a cell phone can start a fire. One of their transfer plants burned down because someone tried to recycle a cell phone with a lithium ion battery. And so it's just something about getting in there and talking with people and getting your hands a little bit dirty that really tells the story.
Did you anticipate that this, like, you would end up doing these things, or was that kind of built in that, like, if I'm going to go beyond my block, I'm going to have to leave my block to find out, like, kind of the nuts and bolts of what's going on right around me? Like, were you expecting some travel and some hands-on experiences as part of the research?
Yeah. When I wrote A Splintered History of Wood, when I wrote the first draft, my agent said, you got to get out of your chair and get out there and get the real stories. And so right from the get-go, I wanted to find interesting people and interesting places that would make the stories come to life. So you mentioned, DemCon, but, you know, I visited the Trash Museum of New York City, and a guy named Nelson Molina, who has accumulated 45,000 items that he has in his trash museum. And they range everywhere from signed pictures of Jacqueline Kennedy to pieces of the World Trade Center to Stratocaster guitars. And just to get down to the nitty gritty is really where the stories are.
So, you know, you start looking out your window and realizing to yourself, maybe I don't know all that's going on around me. Do you build like an itemized list of like, I want to learn more about, you know, the pavement that I see on the sidewalk or the power lines I see overhead? Like, how do you start kind of sussing out what your trajectory is?
Well, I always look for a thread that can hang a story together. And so for instance, the trash story, I interviewed a woman named Bea Johnson from San Francisco, of Zero Waste Home, whose family of four generates only enough trash to fit it into a 1-quart jar. And so you take someone like that and you interview them, and it's a way of pacing the story that we can contrast what we do with what she does and what she's learned along the way and how she started. And so, different threads are necessary. When I did the chapter on pigeons, I found a pigeon racer and a guy named Dr. Phil Nelson. And he was the thread that kind of carried the story on that. We participated in, you know, training a pigeon and in a pigeon race. And in the course of doing that, you have an opportunity to talk about, the incredible attributes that a pigeon has, the history of pigeons, the fact that they've won more awards for valor in war than any other animal by far. And so by finding a thread, that thread can lead to a lot of different places, and hopefully you can kind of wind up that thread by the time you get to the end of the chapter.
Did you ever run the risk, like, feeling like the thread was like unspooling, like you were maybe like you were fascinated with something, but it wasn't necessarily going to lead somewhere?
Yeah. You know, the parks chapter, I wrote and rewrote and rewrote and almost dropped it. It was just kind of hard to get a handle on what to do with that. They're so important. They have such a history. It would be so easy to get lost in the weeds just talking about Central Park and the history of that. So kind of the thread I took on that were just as taking a tour of Minneapolis parks and kind of a checklist of things that they provided and benefits they provided. But some stories, you'll leave an interview and it's written in your head by the time you get back. And other ones, you just beat your head against the wall for weeks and weeks. So this book was a combination of those.
When you're beating your head against the wall, how do you like find your way then, right? Like, because like you said, some might write themselves, like someone might give you just the juiciest quote or the best through line. But when you're having to kind of like pull it out or like rework it, what does that work look like for you?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, the saying is you have to kill your little darlings. And sometimes you can work for weeks on a piece and it's just not happening. And you're moving things around and you're massaging it and it's just not happening. And so you just kind of put a new sheet of paper in the typewriter and start all over again. And I guess, you know, over the course of this book, we had to drop four chapters just for length and things like that. I don't think they were necessarily bad chapters or poorly written, but there's some things where if you don't find that thread and it's just not happening, you know it. And given the scope of this book, there were hundreds of things we could write about. And we wrote about 26.
So excising those four then, or, you know, whittling that hundreds list down to the 26, is that an editor or is that just you kind of in like sort of the like pre-writing phase kind of sussing things out? Or like, yeah. Had, you know, like, did you have like a wish list and just say, oh, you know what, this one's not achievable within the scope of the book? Or?
Yeah, the publisher... it's a business and they know how many page book will sell for what. They have a sense of what this book, what the audience is, what the attention span might be. So I knew a rough word count on what it needed to be. And so when you start editing things down in a book like this, sometimes the first stuff to go are the personal things or the humorous things or the sidebars, because you want to get the information across. And so rather than kind of stripping down 26 individual chapters, we just took four chapters and set them aside for a walk around the block number two.
The sidebars and things like that, you have, you know, hacks and facts, you know, like at the end of the recycling chapter, you have like a list from Bill Keegan of like the worst things to recycle. Building those out and putting those in, is that, it's not necessarily to kind of like synthesize everything you've talked about in it. It feels like more like sidebars or like pull quotes or things like that. Is that, am I reading that right? That that's kind of like the design?
Well, you know, some of the sidebars we call walk the walk, you know, coming from the saying talk the talk and walk the walk. And so after you've delivered this information to people, rather than just letting it sit there, you can offer some suggestions. Some people don't even think about tree care. You know, they just grow, right? And, but at the end of that chapter, we talk about three things you can do to help, you know, trees survive and, you know, things you should never flush down the toilet. Mm-hmm. And, so I'm a big fan of bulleted items and things like that. So these are just real actionable items. Some stuff sits a little bit outside of the main flow of the chapter. And so you put it in a little sidebar like that. You know, like, why does grass look greener on the other side? You know, why do pigeons strut? You know, just kind of fun little facts like that, that you want to get in there, but might break up the main flow of the story.
Yeah. I was thinking of like the fire plugs, the origin of like the term fire plug.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a fun one. I actually, when I wrote A Splintered History of Wood, had kind of referred back to that. And, you know, the story is water systems used to be made of wood. And when there was a fire, the fire department would dig a pit down to that pipe and drill a hole and then bail water out of the pit that was created. And when they were done, they'd stick a stick in there and let it extend above ground so they could find it again. So when they plugged the hole, it was called a fire plug. And then they'd hire the the meanest, nastiest looking person on the block to kind of protect that, because a lot of fire departments were private back then, and those people were called plug ugly. So that's kind of some of the fun origins of some of that terminology.
Those kind of feel like the things, like when you're researching, you just kind of like put an asterisk beside, like, I want to include this, but I don't know how quite to work it into the main body of my thing. So it might have to be an aside.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, when I write a chapter, you just start writing stuff down. You footnote it as you go, and then you start moving the puzzle pieces around until you see what the picture is going to be. And hopefully they all fit.
The chapters themselves, like, did you, like you said, you had, you know, landed on 26 out of like 100 plus kind of ideas. I'm imagining you didn't write them in sequence.
No, in fact, it was all done, you know, kind of at the same time. I would hit a topic, hit it hard, but then once your radar is up on a topic, it's amazing the stuff that will flow into that. You know, like when I did the chapter on graffiti, I spent time in Paris with a graffiti artist and we did graffiti. And, you know, after that experience, I really kept my eyes open for graffiti in this town and other graffiti artists and things like that. So I would always try to, you know, hit one subject pretty hard, kind of get the basics in there, but then really keep radar up for, you know, for other things that you can pull into the story.
Is that like radar something that you've had as a writer going back to like your magazine days and things like searching out stories and
yeah,
like kind of keeping your feet on the ground?
I used to do articles even on things like wire nuts. And once you start looking into wire nuts, there's more there than you would think, you know? So I think it makes life more interesting when you have a topic you're interested in and your radar goes up and you start discovering things you never knew before. I think that's a lot of fun.
Did you have any questions that you didn't get answered in researching this book? Like, were there things where you thought, I wonder what that does or how that works, and you just either didn't have time to figure it out or just kind of hit a blank wall?
Well, I mean, good question. I used, you know, experts and consultants for everything and ran the information by them. Some things, no matter how deep you dig, let's talk about, you know, cell phone reception. There's so much there. There's so much history. There's so much technology that, you know, the best you can try to do is get the basics in there. If you look hard enough, you can find experts on everything, and they love sharing their knowledge. You know, whether it's a squirrel linguist or someone who works in a sewage treatment plant, people love sharing that information and they appreciate it. When I did the section on electricity, my consultant wrote back and said, thank you for helping people understand this. So that information is free flowing.
You didn't encounter anyone who just didn't want to talk about the area that they're an expert in?
You know, there were some times I didn't get an email back. And that's, you know, whenever you find a good consultant or a good line and you don't hear back. But I'd say 95% of the time you get a response. Having written a book before is helpful. Mm-hmm. I think having a name like Spike is a little helpful. And so people were really quite helpful.
People will always talk to Spike. That's your, you found. One of the people that you quite close to home ask is Elizabeth, your postal carrier.
Yeah.
To join her on her rounds. You know, when it seems like an easy ask, right? Because that's someone who comes to your door every day. But at the same time, was there any kind of hoops to jump through with like the U.S. postal system to get them to sign off on this or like?
Yeah. They had to okay that. And a lot of the places I visited, sewage treatment plants, the mail distribution center, the electric plant. They didn't allow any photography, and it had to go through higher channels. But once, but no one said we need to edit this before it goes in. So that information was there. I love doing the section on mail. I got to go down to a distribution center. There's 190 of them in the United States, and it's where all of our mail goes through. If you're sending a letter to your next door neighbor, it's still going to travel 30 miles to that distribution center, get processed, and get sent right back again. And you know, especially when mail is kind of in focus.
With voting,
it's interesting to look back on that and that experience.
Right, with the mail-in ballots and things like that, I have to imagine the U.S. postal system hasn't been under kind of more of a magnifying glass in years, and it's interesting that you kind of go behind the scenes as to kind of like how those envelopes end up where they do.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I discovered very quickly is that all the distribution centers and any post office of any size has a postal inspector walkway with its own entry door. And at any given time, there could be someone up there looking through a two-way mirror to protect the sanctity of the U.S. mail. And it's a real deal. And they're in charge of a lot of different things, from Ponzi scheme to child pornography to theft and that type of thing. And so there really are safeguards everywhere in that system.
Yeah. As far as you had been an educator before you were a writer, or maybe I'm not sure if they were concurrent, but you taught elementary school. And I'm very curious to know if, you know, your experience as an elementary school teacher either like fortified you or prepared you for writing in the style that you do, where it's educational but also fun. Like, is this something that, like, you know, in terms of designing lesson plans and stuff like that, you kind of borrow from that approach to putting together a book like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. You can have all the best information in the world, but if you deliver it in a dry manner, it's not gonna work its way into people's brains. And so working as an elementary school teacher, there's a lot of translating of complex ideas into simpler ideas, trying to generate some enthusiasm around things. And I love teaching, and writing is kind of a roundabout way of teaching. So I get that out of my system as I write also.
The other thing that I picked up on, and certainly in looking at your Goodreads author page, talked about influences, was Bill Bryson. And I mean, obviously there's the walk aspect of the Bill Bryson style. And then there's, you know, like compiling a world's worth of history into, you know, one book. How heavy an influence is Bill Bryson? And like, do you ever worry about like kind of being in that ballpark with someone who's kind of like a giant in that aspect?
Yeah. I mean, he is a giant, and I guess, you know, the whole time you're writing a book, you go, oh, I hope Bryson isn't writing a book like this. But, you know, people like him and John McPhee, who can write an entire book on oranges or ships, or Mary Roach. There's so many good people in this category, that you can really learn a lot from them. I mean, these days there's books out there on cod and on the number zero and on clay and on, you know, Bill Bryson's latest book is about the body. You know, there's this whole genre out there of people that take a deep dive into things. So it's both a little bit nerve-wracking, but a lot of good educational stuff out there.
Well, like you mentioned, you were, you know, in the sewers, and there's those, you know, wall full of books about, you know, sewer systems. But that's, you know, for someone who is invested in that system and working in it, and having something where you have an entryway to explain it to people who are lay people. I think that will always have a path for a writer, because most of us aren't experts in a variety of things. We're, you know, good at one thing and then curious about a lot of other things.
Yeah. I mean, that whole shelf full of books essentially boils down to, you got to have the pipe slope right, because if the water's running too fast, it's not going to carry away what it's supposed to carry away. If the water's running too slow, it's not going to carry away what it's supposed to carry away. And so there it is in a couple sentences, what the nuts and bolts of sewage disposal are. And so those are the kind of ideas you want to get across.
As an outsider coming in and asking those questions, then is it freeing, because you're just like, I don't know what I don't know, so I can ask the obvious question?
Yeah, I'm never afraid to ask a dumb question. And even if I think I know something, I'll ask it, because it turns out that there's more to know. And so, like I say, people are so, they're so passionate about what they do and so willing to share information, especially in areas like this where, you know, there's not that many people inside whose life is in charge of painting lines on roads that get interviewed. And they're so passionate about what they do and so, you know, eager to share information that you get some really good stuff.
Well, and as you know, someone who's driven a highway at night, those lines on the roads are virtually vitally important. So, you know, I think we don't necessarily give due to the things that are so critical. And that's one of the things you talk about right in the preface to the book is, you know, that like people call this like infrastructure I think you call it soda cracker dry terminology, but that it's like, it's the stuff that makes the world work.
Yeah. And so much of it we don't see because, you know, waters and sewers are buried underground and our trash and recycling get whisked away and the electrical lines are up in the air and asphalt and concrete we take for granted. So there's so much that we just, that just bypasses us, but there's so much to know about it.
Well, this book goes some ways to explaining all of that. It's called A Walk Around the Block, Squirrels, Sewers, Stoplights, and Other Stuff You See Every Day But Know Nothing About. It's out on HarperCollins, just came out. Spike, thanks very much for taking some time to talk about the book.
This was great. Thanks for having me on.